This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the February 3rd, 2012 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. I'm Natalie Pinchem. Topics covered in this podcast are oncology, traumatic brain injury, functional neurosurgery, epilepsy, vestibular schwannoma, and vascular disorders. Novel report of expression and function of CD97 in malignant gliomas. Correlation with Wilms tumor 1 expression and glioma cell invasiveness. A laboratory investigation by Erchana Chidambaram and colleagues. The authors investigated the function of the Wilms tumor 1 gene, which has been demonstrated to be overexpressed in 80% of gliomas. Silencing WT1 expression markedly reduced human glioma cell invasiveness in vitro, but did not consistently affect proliferation. WT1 silencing allowed identification of genes that were coordinately up and downregulated using microarray gene expression profiling. 27 genes were found to be correlated with WT1 expression, and 11 genes were inversely correlated. CD97, a protein previously identified in activated leukocytes, was coordinately affected by WT1 silencing. This G-protein-coupled transmembrane receptor contains WT1 consensus binding sites within its promoter region. Silencing of CD97 expression also profoundly inhibited cellular invasiveness in a panel of glioma cells. Preliminary data demonstrate strong immunopositivity of human glioma samples for CD97 and absence of expression by normal glia. This represents the first report of CD97 expression by human gliomas. The strong dependence of glioma cell invasiveness on WT1 and CD97 expression suggests that targeting these signaling molecules could provide novel strategies for treating primary brain tumors and attacking one of their most malignant features, infiltration of normal brain. Boxing and mixed martial arts. Preliminary traumatic neuromechanical injury risk analyses from laboratory impact dosage data. A laboratory investigation by Adam Bartsch and co-authors. In light of recent calls from clinicians in the United States, Canada, and Australia to ban boxing, in addition to a ban on mixed martial arts in the state of New York, scrutiny on the actual or perceived risk of head and neck injury in combat sports is at an all-time high. What is still unknown, however, is the protection afforded by padded gloves and headgear. Fundamentally understanding how combat sport padding protects against impact forces transmitted to the head and neck is a first step in determining the safest means by which competitors can engage in combat sports. The authors of this study measured linear and rotational impact dosages in a small set of glove and headgear combinations. They calculated head and neck injury metrics by using a crash test dummy and a pendulum which impacts to the left side of the head. They found that head and neck impact dosage accumulated fastest when no headgear was worn and that computer brain injury models indicated risk of injury even when padding significantly reduced impact force. These results merit further investigation, but may imply that combat sport participants should utilize padded headgear whenever possible. Utility of presurgical navigated transcranial magnetic brain stimulation for the resection of tumors in eloquent motor areas. A clinical article by Sandro M. Krigg and co-workers. Navigated transcranial magnetic brain stimulation elicits muscular evoked potentials and can discriminate the corresponding brain region for each muscle in a non-invasive way. In the study, the authors compared the accuracy of motor cortex mapping via navigated transcranial magnetic brain stimulation with established modalities such as direct cortical stimulation and functional magnetic resonance imaging. 26 patients with tumors in or close to the precentral gyrus were examined. Data obtained during mapping of the primary motor cortex via navigated transcranial magnetic brain stimulation correlated well with data obtained using intraoperative direct cortical stimulation with a deviation of 4.4 millimeters. Comparison with functional magnetic resonance imaging showed a deviation of 9.8 millimeters for the upper extremity and 14.7 millimeters for the lower extremity. Moreover, in 13 of 14 patients with lesions within the precentral gyrus, surgeons reported easier identification of the central region, a positive influence on the operative results in 5 cases, and a changed resection strategy in 2 surgeries, all attributable to transcranial magnetic brain stimulation. The authors showed a good correlation between preoperative navigated transcranial brain stimulation and intraoperative direct cortical stimulation as the gold standard. Moreover, the new method was accepted by surgeons as an additional and helpful modality for tumors within eloquent motor regions. A novel technique of multiple site epidural blood patch administration for the treatment of cerebrospinal fluid hypovolemia. A clinical article by Tatsuya Otonari and colleagues. An epidural blood patch is a widely accepted standard procedure to treat cerebrospinal fluid hypovolemia. However, in a number of cases, the leaked fluid is spread over a large area along the spinal epidural space, which makes it difficult for the surgeon to clearly identify the true leakage points. In such cases, autologous blood can be infused at multiple spine levels with multiple entries. However, the authors have devised a new multiple site epidural blood patch method with a single lumbar entry point by way of using an intravenous catheter as a slidable device to provide continuous infusion. This method was used in 5 patients with spontaneous cerebrospinal fluid hypovolemia. The detection of leaked fluid was based on MRI or CT myelography. In all of the cases, the leakage sites could not be identified clearly. All patients underwent surgery in the prone position on an angiography table, and biplane fluoroscopy was used for accurate manipulation. After administration of a local anesthetic, the authors performed the procedure. In all cases, orthostatic headache disappeared completely or was relieved. This efficient treatment option for cerebrospinal fluid hypovolemia enables infusion of sufficient amount of autologous blood into multiple epidural areas with a single lumbar entry point. Rates and predictors of long-term seizure freedom after frontal lobe epilepsy surgery. A systematic review and meta-analysis. A clinical article by Dario Englott and co-authors. Frontal lobe epilepsy is the second most common focal epilepsy syndrome. Seizures are refractory to medications in many patients, making surgery an attractive treatment option for achieving seizure control. Although various studies have examined rates and predictors of seizure freedom after resection for frontal lobe epilepsy, there is significant variability in their results due to patient diversity and inadequate follow-up. This may lead to an overestimation of long-term seizure freedom. In this article, the authors report the first systematic review and meta-analysis of long-term seizure outcomes and predictors of response after resection for intractable frontal lobe epilepsy. To investigate long-term outcomes, the authors only included studies of more than 10 patients that examined seizure freedom after frontal lobe epilepsy surgery with postoperative follow-up duration of at least 48 months. Across 1,199 patients in 21 studies, the overall rate of postoperative seizure freedom, or an Engel Class 1 outcome, was 45.1%. There was no trend in seizure outcomes across all studies observed over time. The authors identified four significant predictors of long-term seizure freedom, including lesional epilepsy origin versus non-lesional, abnormal preoperative MRI versus normal, and localized frontal resection versus more extensive lobectomy with or without an extrafrontal component. Also, within lesional frontal lobe epilepsy cases, gross total resection led to significantly improved outcome versus subtotal lesionectomy. These findings suggest that frontal lobe epilepsy patients with a focal and identifiable lesion are more likely to achieve seizure freedom than those with a more poorly defined epileptic focus. Although seizure freedom can be achieved in the surgical treatment of medically refractory frontal lobe epilepsy, these findings illustrate the compelling need for improved non-invasive and invasive localization techniques. Crocodile tears syndrome after vestibular schwannoma surgery. A clinical article by Akira Nakamizo and co-workers. The term crocodile tears arises out of an ancient Greek myth that crocodiles shed tears to lure their prey and continued to cry as they devoured them. Crocodile tears syndrome, or CTS, is a lacrimal hypersecretion disorder characterized by excessive tearing with gustatory stimulation while eating, drinking, or smelling food. It is a relatively rare syndrome that has mainly been observed after incomplete recovery from peripheral facial nerve palsy. Surgeons tend to overlook its occurrence after vestibular schwannoma surgery because abnormalities of the non-motor functions of the facial nerve are not as obvious as a paralyzed face. The authors evaluated 128 patients in whom vestibular schwannomas had been resected via a retrosigmoid lateral suboccipital approach. they found that 10% of patients developed CTS with a bimodal distribution of the onset. Motor function of the facial nerve at discharge was statistically related to the occurrence of CTS. The syndrome improved in 70% of patients and resolved completely in only 50% within 10 months on average. The authors conclude that CTS is more common than expected. However, the surgical procedure intended to protect the functioning of the facial nerve appears to be conducive to the reduced occurrence of CTS. Treatment and outcomes of acute intracranial vertebrobasilar artery occlusion. One institution's experience. A clinical article by Sharon Webb and colleagues. In the past, acute intracranial vertebrobasilar artery occlusion was associated with high mortality rates in excess of 75%, despite anticoagulation and antiplatelet therapy. Endovascular treatment has subsequently emerged, leading to improved outcomes and reduced mortality. The authors describe their recent experience with multimodal treatment of acute intracranial vertebrobasilar artery occlusion. Treatment modalities included a combination of pharmacological thrombolysis, clot retrieval and aspiration devices, angioplasty, and stent placement. Among the 22 patients treated, 73% had successful revascularization. The overall survival rate was 64%, and 59% of the patients were discharged either to home or to a rehabilitation facility. The average National Institutes of Health stroke scale score at discharge in the 14 surviving patients was 3.9. At the last follow-up, an average of 14.5 months post-intervention, 71% of surviving patients achieved good outcomes with a modified Rankin scale score of 2 or less. The times to intervention and successful recanalization were associated with good outcomes. This study showed that revascularization of posterior circulation occlusion is feasible and that good outcomes and lower mortality rates with newer endovascular technologies can be achieved, even in patients who present with severe neurological deficits, if they are treated early and effectively. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the newly launched American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.